horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and we'll call it hour two, just a couple of minutes ahead, and we're just about an hour away from the start of the two-year-old in training sale season. Tom Ventura joins us from OBS Sales. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Bright and sunny down here.
Well, and that's the way we like it, and certainly you've got, it seems, a bright and sunny outlook on the on the horizon, Tom. It feels like there's a lot of optimism and momentum as we seem to be waning on the pandemic front and ascending on the breeding and sale front.
Yeah, I think everybody, this business in general is one that's a glass half full business, but we are certainly seeing a little bit of that, maybe cabin fever. People are ready to get out and get back to doing what they like to do.
Well, give us a lay of the land, and here we are about an hour away from the start in terms of terms of the sales ground and participation. Give us a feel for what what it's like and what kind of a sale you're anticipating.
We had a very good breeze show. The conditions were ideal. And then the early scouts were here. The grandstand had a little more people than we've seen in the past. Certainly more than last year although last year things were just starting to escalate during the breeze show. And then the barn area has been very busy, and a lot of feedback, quality feedback from the buyers on the horses on the grounds, and the consigners are happy that some of the horses that aren't the ones that kind of float to the very top of the sale have activity, and they've been real pleased with that. So hopefully that notch below is going to be active and busy. But it seems like just based on what we're seeing, and I've been walking around the barns the last couple of days, and a lot of familiar faces and some people that don't play at the very top of the game are here to buy some horses, and I think there's an opportunity there for them.
And I could sense that there was like a bit of an eagerness, to get at this, and there was, there was more, maybe a little bit more buzz, and I suppose some of that might be people that I don't want to say were excluded, but just didn't get their normal, their normal calendar of attendance and inventory accruals last year.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think, the uncertainty of it all didn't help. And, they kind of battened down the hatches, and maybe people that bought horses bought less, and some people that, bought, one or two decided to sit it out. So I think, just from that angle, I think people are, ready to get back to business. And, from the side of the purse structure is so good that, people can have a horse that if he doesn't, isn't a graded stakes horse or a notch below those top horses, you can make some real money. Obviously Belmont's condition book came out with their purses, and they're excellent, and Oaklawn is, superb. And then you go to some of those other tracks that are, the Indiana Grands and those kind of tracks that have very competitive purses right now. And, of course, you've got Kentucky where they passed the historical racing and put that behind them. So I think from that perspective, that's going to help as well. So, we're looking for the best. The one thing, that going into this sale, the pinhooks are less, which is expected because the market was different this September and October than last September and October, where the pinhookers were buying in one market and certainly sold in a much different market. So we'll see that if the prices, it's not one that you can compare year to year, because that's just kind of hopefully a blip on our radar when we look back at it. But one of the things that there's less in total invested in these horses than there was last year. So even if our numbers are slightly down, I wouldn't be disappointed with that. You know, I think the key to it is get back to business, sell a lot of horses, keep the RNAs at a reasonable level, and I think it'll be good to kind of get that 2-year-old season off and running.
That generates a follow-up, actually, that something you just said there about the way in which things may have either shifted or just taken a temporary turn, and that is, you know, some breeders, you know, not consigning and basically hanging on and you know, waiting to see, or putting horses, putting, you know, the yearlings they may have sold, putting them into training, perhaps, and going from there. In terms of the head count, I think I got the catalog here. You had 500 and change. Was that 560? Was that a typical number for March?
Well, last year we had almost 100 more. So, and you know, and the number of horses that were entered were similar. So we did filter it down. It's not a select sale, but we do kind of filter out some of the horses that we just don't think are quite ready for the first sale of the year. So we're down 100 horses. The April sale is full at 1,200. That sale always overfills. But I think that could, you know, be the case where the numbers are just a little smaller. So I'm not really sure what the numbers will be in June in terms of total horses. I expect it'll be less than last year. We'll still have plenty of horses in June, but it'll probably be a little less than last year. So I think, you know, now people have an opportunity to get in and you know, go on to the races with some of these horses that are early and ready to go.
Yeah, and the catalog, it's really a varied one thing that I did notice was that it felt like you had a kind of a wider array of stock in this catalog for March.
And we've been making an effort to do that. You know, when we eliminated the select moniker from the sale, we made an effort to kind of recruit some horses that, you know, people may not typically expect to see in the March sale, but are mature horses and ready to go on with it. And I don't know how many stallions are represented, but it's about 80 or so, which is significant number. So you're going to have the Intermischiefs and the, you know, the top of the crop and the Warfronts and those kind of horses. But there's the regional sires, whether they're from Oklahoma or Louisiana. And you certainly have our Florida representation. So there was that effort on our part to broaden the offerings so that we can attract the buyers that are looking for horses for their stable, and we're not looking for the guys that are going to come and pick off the top. We want them to be here. We've got horses for them here, but we wanted that next group of horses that say, hey, I need to go to this sale too. And I think just based on the action at the barns, I think that's coming into play right now.
Well, and the you know, the first place that that I always turn in the catalog is to, in this case, page 81, which was indexed to area fold. And you know, I'm first order is to go through the New York breds, and one of the things that jumped at me right away was the breadth of the Kentucky listings, the Kentucky bred listings. I don't want to say at the expense of the Florida breds, but that really, I mean, it was just instantly apparent that you had brought in a much higher percentage of Kentucky breds into this catalog.
Yeah, and I don't think that was a conscious effort. I think, it's kind of the nature of it. These are the horses by those popular sires that stand up there. I think that we tried to bring in some of the Florida breds and New York breds and those type horses. Obviously, you know, Kentucky folds, account for the majority of the fall crop anyway. So, I mean, we just tried to recruit the best mix of horses that we could and work with the consigners. And, you know, that's where we have to be thankful for, because they're the ones bringing us the horses, and they know that this market in Ocala has been very solid for many years at the 2-year-old market. So, you know, without that relationship with them, you know, we would be, we wouldn't be complete. We have to have, it's a two-way street, so we need their help, and we need them to bring the horses, and we need to market them for them.
Well, and one thing that markets itself is, you know, first crop sires, and we always talk about it, you know, the first crop that hits the yearling, even the weanling market these days, but then the yearling and now two-year-olds, and there's some real anticipation when you look at the list of first crop sires that are on the grounds and that we're going to see through the two-year-old you know, in training sales season. Yesterday, it's funny, Tom, two unprompted, both Bob Baffert and Kenny McPeak cited the Unifieds as babies that they, you know, that they were impressed with. And there's as many as seven that were listed. Connect has got his first babies here, and Classic Empire. I mean, there's going to be some closely watched first crop stallions through the ring the next 48 hours.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to watch them sell as yearlings, and then they perform on the racetrack here at the two-year-old and training sales and go on. But yeah, they're very well represented. I think this first group of sires, this first crop sires, is a very solid bunch on top of a very good group from last year too. And you're seeing those horses that currently have you know, three-year-olds at the track that are very well represented. So, you know, like I said, with so many different sires represented, we have just about you know, something for everyone here. You know, there's going to be the $30,000 horses. There's going to be the $500,000 horses. And I think that's important to make this sale successful.
Well, and some other names, first croppers. How about, you know, the interesting story of Lord Nelson? Lord Nelson's got his first two-year-olds here after he had the back problem and couldn't, you know, right when he was supposed to start his career, so a little delayed. I think people have been anticipating his babies. Mohamed has got his first as well, another, you know, one of the latest Tappet sons at market.
Yeah, I think you know, they're lining up, and it's been very positive the last couple of days, and I think people are just anxious to do something that they like to do. This is you know, one of those businesses that you get addicted to it, and you enjoy it. Hmm. You like the rush, and you like the rush of selling them. You like the rush of the winner's circle. Getting to the winner's circle is not an easy task, and when you get there, you better enjoy it.
The process, we should notate, we're going to talk to Aaron Wellman in a minute, who's going to be following the sale remotely, and you know, it was right at this time really that we, you know, had a parade of conversation about the remote purchase options and how OBS, Keeneland, and Fasig all, you know, kind of ratcheted up the mechanics of the remote purchase. You know, talk about, you know, the expectation, and also, I suppose, you know, people got comfortable after last year, Tom, when it came to, you know, not having to be there in person. You throw in the walking videos, obviously the Breeze Show videos, and you know, and more. There's everything anybody could want, even if they're not on the ground, is available to them.
Yeah, we have, you know, that's become very popular. You still need someone somewhere along the line that needs to put an eye on the horse or vet the horse or scope the horse. But, you know, all the options, and we see different levels of buying online. We see the horses, you know, the inexpensive horses, and then we see the very high-end horses. So I think there's a lot of confidence in that. One thing that we've opened up also in the last year, we used to require the veterinarians to come on the grounds, sign in, and then they could go back to their hotel at night and, you know, look in remotely. But we've opened up that aspect of it too. We actually have a veterinarian in Japan that's been logging in from Japan to look at the x-rays in the repository. So it's not just the online bidding process. It's just opening it all up. And like you said, more and more common, and to have walking videos with the horses, photos with the horses. So try and get as much information to the buyers to make them feel comfortable and give them enough information to where they can bid and bid bid with confidence, and that's what we're hoping. Obviously, you know, from an auction company standpoint, we like the juice in the room. We like the adrenaline to be flowing. We like guys to go eye to eye. But the one thing we haven't measured, and I'm sure that there's an analysis out there that does it, is, you know, what makes you hit that mouse button? Do you get mad and want a bit higher, or how does it work? So we're just giving people the opportunities to bid in any way they can, and we'll continue on with the phone bids. But online bidding is here to stay, and getting more information to the buyers in as quick a time as possible. And one of the things I was talking to someone the other day is we used to, before, way back when, you know, we'd have the Breeze Show, we'd have some people there, and the people that weren't there would come and pick up the sheets and see what the times were, and that was the information they got. And then we started videoing the horses, and unfortunately, I'm old enough to know that we were using Betamax at the time, and then we went to VHS, and then we went to DVD, and now, you know, we're live streaming, and within 15 minutes of the last horse breezing in the set, we have the individual clips online. So, you know, we're taking advantage of technology, and, you know, the more we feed the buyers, the better we are, and I think it's better for everybody.
Well, this should be really the first opportunity to get a read on whether it's the first crop stallions, as we said, and also just the whole marketplace in general. I've got the pinhook guide, the TDN lays out. Always interesting to see, you know, how the yearlings and or weanlings that are, you know, getting ready to sell. And even that, to me, looks like a positive, Tom, when I see a lot of six-figure yearlings that are offered here. And, you know, that shows confidence on the consigners' parts as well. I mean, here's a hip 180 that Eddie Woods is consigning, $190,000 filly. So they're looking, you know, and expecting a return on that investment. That shows a lot of confidence in the marketplace. So here's a Munnings for Eddie Woods, a filly, 240. She fetched it at Keeneland. So there's some top, you know, some top flesh on offer here the next 2 days.
Yeah, it should be a good day. Let's hope for the best. You know, it's this time of day, as we're approaching that first tip going through the ring, and people are doing their last checkoffs and doing their vet work and things like that. The people in the barns get anxious. We get anxious in the offices and ready to get going. It's been a journey to get to this spot, and we're ready, and we think that we'll have a good day today, and hopefully it carries through tomorrow. You know, time will tell.
Well, one thing I mentioned at the start of the show, and I think I even referenced it yesterday, coming out of the weekend and the Breeze Show, you know, sometimes we get to the sale, and you know, it's very easy to say, oh, the sale stopper was the fastest, but at the Breeze, in this particular case, there were so many that went the fastest that you know, it's going to come down to a few more, you know, a few more issues or a few more predilections of evaluation, because you had a lot of horses breeze at 9-4.
Yeah, the track was quick, but, you know, people that do this for a living, they certainly can differentiate between the two on the track, their action on the track, and certainly back at the barn. So they'll sort themselves out, and if you go back through the years, you know, it's not always the fastest horse that tops the sale. You know, it's the horses that, you know, have a good way of going. They may not have had the fastest, but they look like they're going to go on, and certainly have bloodlines to go with it, and the pedigree, and I mean, confirmation is nice. So, you know, the ones that jump through all the hoops will bring the most money and hopefully go on and be a good racehorse at the racetrack. But the fastest time is, if you have a choice of going faster or slower, they'll take faster. But I think there's a lot more than goes into it than just the time, and I think that's important. And I think when you sort through videos, if I put the 29 and fours next to each other, there'll be some that you like, and there'll be some that you don't like as much.
Right.
And it's you know, it's that and how they present themselves at the barn.
Tom Ventura, everybody, from OBS Sales, and visit the website. Everything you need is there. And if you got to call down and establish credit and be in position, or if you're looking forward to, you know, April or June, get down. And I, you know, I had hoped to come, Tom, but I'm right in the middle of getting vaccinated. So we'll save it for. Well, I don't know. Can't do it in April because we're on our way to Kentucky by then. But we'll get down. We'll get down soon. Maybe even a summer. Maybe even a June visit.
Well, we miss you, and I think that's the good news: is that people are getting vaccinated, or they've had COVID and they're getting over it. And I think, you know, there's that light at the end of the tunnel that we've been waiting for.
Well, and beyond. You know, beyond these next 2 days, the spring sale, April 20th through the 23rd, with the undertack, April 11th through 17th, and June 1st through 6th for the tack, and then June 9th through 11th for the sale. So we're underway officially in about 45 minutes. Tom, good luck to, you know, to you and your staff, and to all the consigners, all the breeders, and all the buyers.
Appreciate it, Steve. Have a good day.
Tom Ventura, everybody, and OBS. Visit obssales.com, and of course the sales stream all over the you know, the trades there, DRF and Blood Horse as well, to watch what's going to happen. And somebody that's going to be watching and probably participating, even though he can't be there, he's got a pretty good bird dog down in Ocala. Aaron Wellman joins us from Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and certainly Eclipse is on a roll. It's been a very good few weeks. Aaron, good morning. Congratulations.
Thanks so much, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
Not at all. And I've got a list of horses to talk about, obviously, after a wild couple of weeks, but the one you got to be tickled. I could just tell by the way your tweets came out. Ohio winning again at Turf Paradise on Friday night. That was really fun. And the 10-year-old Michael McCarthy's done an amazing job with him, and wins the Cotton Fitzsimmons, and he's just amazing.
No doubt about it. I've been very fortunate to be involved in some really special, high-profile moments in this business during my career. Classics on multiple continents, Breeders' Cup wins, and I will say Ohio's three-peat in the Cotton Fitzsimmons on Friday at Turf Paradise might have been one of the coolest experiences I've ever had, for sure.
I love it. This is one of those horses, you know, you get to a certain point, and I don't, you're not going to say they train themselves, but it is, if a horse is basically sound, they can, you know, they'll keep racing. You know, talk about the decision, you know, year after year to keep going with him.
You're absolutely right, and I do appreciate, Steve, you bringing this story to everyone's attention, because it's a story worth telling, and it really does embody and epitomize all that's good about the sport. This horse is 10 years old. He's run 36 times. We had him off for about a year and made the conscientious decision to bring him back for another season at the age of 10, which is a pretty aggressive move to make, especially this day and age. And, you know, with so much scrutiny put on the industry and trying to do what's best for the horses and keeping horses sound, it definitely took guts on Michael McCarthy's part, our partner Bruce Treitman, and the Eclipse partners to bring this guy back. He's a grade one winner. In fact, I remember being at Gulfstream Florida Derby Day the day he won the Kilrow Mile at Santa Anita, and I was watching it from upstairs at Ten Palms, and when I came down to see our Florida Derby runner get saddled, you happened to be in the walkway that leads to the racetrack from the paddock, and I was just floating on cloud nine and saw you, and I said, we just won the Kilrow Mile, and you were one of the first people I saw. But, you know, he is just such a cool horse. And that's where the credit starts, is with the animal himself. And then it goes to Michael McCarthy and his entire staff for the job that they've done with him. When we decided to bring him back, it was totally conditioned upon if there was ever a hair out of place, we would just stop and find him a second career. But this horse has come back. He's never, touch wood, taken a bad step. He's never shown us any signs of not wanting to continue to compete. And that's what good horsemen do. They know what their horses are capable of and what they're not. And to see Ohio come back and win any race for the third year in a row, but a stake like the Cotton Fitzsimmons, is really meaningful. And this is the type of story that our industry needs to glom onto, because, like I said, it represents all that's good about the game.
And, you know, he obviously, he's one of those horses, he'll tell you when, you know, when he's ready, right? I mean, Michael, you will, and you'll dread that call, but Michael's going to call one morning and say, I don't know. I think this, you know, it's all over. But in the meantime, it's amazing.
Yeah, and Ohio owes us nothing. So when that call comes, if that call comes, it will not be disappointment. It will be purely reflecting back on the joy that he brought all of us throughout this run that we've been on with him. And honestly, we brought him back to try to win the Cotton Fitzsimmons for a third time. Michael's a sportsman and a horseman, and we'd like to think of ourselves as the same. And this was really something that we had our eye on. And as many horses that we had to flex with and alter course throughout the pandemic over the course of the last year that could have potentially played a negative role on their schedules, the Cotton Fitzsimmons is usually run in January. And even though Ohio ran an allowance at Santa Anita in January, we wouldn't have wanted to run him in the Cotton Fitzsimmons off such a long layoff, being his first race. So with Turf Paradise pushing the Fitzsimmons back to March, it really benefited Ohio. We got the prep race in him. We had the generous spacing. So that was, you'll appreciate a Yiddish term, Steve, that was all beshert. And to see it all to come to fruition on Friday was just as cool as it gets.
Well, it is excited, and I really, it's funny, I think I bet and watched more races from Turf Paradise on Friday night than I had collectively the previous two or three seasons. There was actually all kinds of nice races to enjoy that I should mention. Chief Cicatrice as well, with the win in the Phoenix Gold Cup. And he's a cool, not one of yours, but he's a cool horse. And then there were the three-year-olds. Bob Hess winning the Derby with It's My House, and Eric Karolik with Don't Pass the Pepper in the Oaks. So it was really a nice way to ease into the weekend. And in the meantime, we certainly aren't going to, before we talk about Ocala and about the year ahead for you guys, we got to talk about the crazy weekend involved at Gulfstream. And it just, you had five opportunities, you win four races, and then add another one on Sunday. Talk about everything that went on, you know, and of course, part of it was a weird situation when it came to getting put up with Con Lima, but for the most part, it was just impressive performances, you know, one after another. And let's start with the DQ before we get into, you know, an annex and the rest.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the most bizarre experiences I had ever had in my professional career in horse racing. We ran two fillies in the Grade Three Here Comes the Bride. One was Spanish Love Affair, trained by Mark Cassie. The other was a filly named Con Lima, trained by Todd Pletcher. It's not something that we really like to do, running multiple horses in the same race, especially fillies in graded company against one another, but we're blessed right now to have a pretty deep roster in that division, and we had to split several of them up, and there just had to be some overlap. Conelim is a filly that is pretty quirky. She's comfortable at Gulfstream Park. We wanted to keep her there in Spanish Love Affair. It was her first race back after the Breeders' Cup, so we wanted to keep her local as well. So we couldn't split them up. But they were certainly the two superior fillies in the race. Spanish Love Affair, unfortunately, was disqualified after winning by open length, and our other filly, Conelim, rallied for second. And sure enough, there was a marker hanging up there with the inquiry sign from the stewards for an incident around the far turn involving Spanish Love Affair. They determined that she cost another filly a position in the race. They took her down and put Conelim up. So all of our partnerships at Eclipse are unique into them themselves. So it's not all the same partners in every horse. Every one contains different partners. So it was a touchy situation. We knew going in that it was going to be a showdown between these two fillies, and all the partnerships were understanding and supportive of that move. We're very transparent about those intentions, but nobody could have foreseen what would have transpired. Thankfully, the incident did not involve Spanish Love Affair fouling Conelim. If that was the case, it would have made my job a lot more tricky than it already was. But Conelim was sort of an innocent bystander and got promoted. It was an unfortunate situation for Spanish Love Affair, but we're really lucky at Eclipse to have just an incredible base of partners, and we're sophisticated owners that understand the game. And while you never want to see a filly get taken down in any race, let alone a grade three, everybody just sort of had to put on their big boy pants. You know, I always say this is not a game made for men who wear short pants, and that incident was a microcosm. And thankfully, this is why we've got that hashtag Eclipse Fillies, because we believe in the power of the filly, and it's a portfolio sport. So in this case, while one partnership was let down with the DQ, we had a backup filly, and she got put up.
And you know, I should mention, because we talked to Mark Cassie last week, and or actually now it's the week before. Have you heard anything about Thursday? I think it was Thursday's was the hearing, right?
It was
the appeal. How'd that go? Do we have any news from that?
Yeah, so the appeal was very interesting. It was a good insight into the process. The stewards, the independent third-party arbitrator, officials from Gulfstream Park, and then Tyler Gaffione, who was the rider of Spanish Love Affair, actually brought in Jerry Bailey as an expert witness, Hall of Fame rider Jerry Bailey, and then Mark Cassie and our partner on Spanish Love Affair, Gary Barber, were all on the call. I was on the call but recused myself for obvious reasons. The stewards took about 48 hours to make a determination, and they upheld the disqualification. So Spanish Love Affair is officially demoted from first to fourth, and Conelim put up from second to first.
Very good. All right. Well, I feel badly, obviously, for those that got taken down. And I, at the time, and certainly on Saturday, this goes back to the 27th. It's not a day. It's not a day Gary Barber has circled in red. This was a tough day for Gary. He's had a lot of wonderful days, but this wasn't one of them.
Yeah, he had a rough day, and you know, like you said, he comes back swinging even harder the next day. So. Mama said there'll be days like that for Gary Barber, but he's got plenty of depth to his roster as well. He's a phenomenal partner, and even though collectively we had a rough day with the DQ of Spanish Love Affair and his individual horses, had some tough beats, to show you what kind of sportsman and mensch he is, you know, he was texting me and calling me all day long, despite the DQ that he was pretty angry about, but he's an incredible partner and a friend, and was rooting for Eclipse and congratulating me throughout what was just a colossal day for our stable. So he's one of the good guys.
Well, and part of the day included a very notable step forward and second start and a three-year-old colt that clearly has got a lot to say about the, you know, the sophomore turf division this year. Talk about Annex, the Constitution colt for Bill Mott. You're partnered there with the Roths and L&J Foxwoods.
Yeah, and I want to thank the Roth family for allowing Eclipse to purchase a significant interest in this colt alongside of them after he broke his maiden at Gulfstream in January, became a TDN Rising Star. Wonderful people, so supportive of the sport. We actually partnered on a yearling last year. He's now two, and we've been in talks for a few years trying to hook up and connect on some. And this colt caught my eye after his debut, and thankfully he validated that unveiling with an incredible performance in the Palm Beach. He got up to win in a very oddly shaped and paced race. He's a son of Constitution. He's been good to Eclipse in the form of Independence Hall previously, and there's no telling how good this colt Annex might be. He's certainly in the right hands with Hall of Famer Bill Mott, and you know, as tempting as it might be to test the dirt this time of year with a colt like Annex, who gets two turns and has so much raw ability, we're going to take the conservative route at the moment and keep him on the turf. Whether he runs between now and the American turf on Derby Day at Churchill Downs for $500,000 will be up to Bill Mott. But that is our near-term goal. And then, of course, the lucrative turf triple in New York through the summer would be races that we've got to circle around as well, with always the idea in the back of our minds that if he does strengthen and earn the right to test the dirt, we will certainly consider that as well.
Aaron, take a minute, and you're a particularly good, you know, enterprise to answer this question. Help people, casual observers, and those that that are interested in getting into some kind of a partnership, explain how the decision-making process works and you know, the negotiation elements. I mean, obviously, L&J Foxwoods is an ongoing and you know, major owner and now breeder in the game. And a family operation as opposed to a, you know, a public partnership group. But, you know, you partner up with all different kinds of entities and individuals. So just give everybody a primer on how the decisions are made, and when you buy into a horse, or when somebody comes to you to buy in, how, you know, how those structures basically morph and are created.
Just like any other business, it's all about relationships, Steve. And I was fortunate to grow up in the business in Southern California. And in this instance, as it relates to the Roth, their bloodstock advisors are Alex Solis Jr. and Jason Litt. Alex is someone who I grew up with here in Southern California. His father, Alex Sr., obviously being a Hall of Fame jockey. And Alex and I were sort of barn rats as kids and, you know, lived our summers. If we weren't on the beach in Del Mar, we were in the barns. And, in fact, one of the first ever bloodstock deals Alex and I did as aspiring professionals in the game was together on a filly named Val Benny.
Sure.
And Val Benny became a really good turf filly after we imported her from Europe and won a bunch of graded stakes races. And when the time came at the end of her three-year-old season to sell her at auction, because, hey, we were just trying to cut our teeth and make a buck and do good for our partners, Jason Litt was working for Three Chimneys at the time, and he was recruiting mares to the sales. And Jason came out to Del Mar and showed Alex a good time. We had fun. We forged a relationship there and then. The mare ended up selling for $1.2 million that November, and we were all off and running. Jason and Alex took their relationship to a whole new level and created a bloodstock agency together. The Roths became, you know, their primary clients in due time. And when that colt won, I picked up the phone and called my buddies, Alex and Jason, and we were fortunate enough to get the deal done. And I've gotten to know Jamie and her parents over the last couple of years, just wonderful, classy people that understand the sport and have become so sophisticated in such a short period of time. And that's really a testament to Alex and Jason's expertise and educating them the right way. And that's really what it's all about. So at the end of the day, it boils down to relationships. In this instance, that's just a lucky scenario where I happened to grow up with Alex and got to know Jason in due time. You know, but when we started Eclipse 9 years ago plus, you know, I had limited experience through my tenure at Team Valor when I was the vice president of that operation under the tutelage of Barry Irwin for 4.5 years. And, you know, but until you go out on your own and you earn your own reputation and the trust of others, you got to really just put in the work. And fortunately, right from the start, the horses at Eclipse really spoke for themselves. That was the best advertisement for our brand and for my abilities. And the relationships come from there. You know, now when I look at the roster of partners that we've got internally under the Eclipse umbrella and external partners like Gary Barber, like Gainsway Farm, like Mike Rapoli and Everett Dobson, and the list goes on and on. It's just so flattering, so humbling that these titans of industry, you know, whether it be Stone Street or Ron Winchell or, you know, you name it, we've probably partnered with them. Bob LaPenta, you know, just it's incredible. It's hugely humbling, and it's a testament to our horses, the horsemen that are in charge of our horses and their success, and then just hopefully us on our end of the bargain, bringing the skill and expertise that we provide. And then at the end of the day, Steve, it's just treating people right and having good relationships, and hopefully we can continue that trend and the horses will continue to succeed on the racetrack and deliver for our partners.
As part of the mechanics, when it comes to decisions, I mean, how many things are 50-50 and you have to have a give and take with whoever's involved, or is it a matter of, you know, always setting things up so that there is a general managing partner that, you know, that has making the calls, or how much of it is negotiation? I mean, I'm sure that a lot of this is on a horse by horse basis.
It is. And look, at this stage of the game, there's so much competition at the top. There's a lot of overlap, you know, and partnering up has become the rule rather than the exception.
Yeah.
And that's a testament to the structure that Cott Campbell devised 40 plus years ago, you know, and we see where it's evolved. Now you've got conglomerates and titans of industry combining with one another where you, 5-10 years ago, you never would have thought that possible. But I'm a firm believer in transparency from the outset. When we shake hands and say, hey, we're going to go and try to buy a horse at public auction together, we've got an understanding how that horse is going to be managed and who's going to be running point. But quite frankly, you know, there's a lot of really smart people and sophisticated people involved in this game. I feel like the competition at the top is fiercer than ever. And any alignment that Eclipse is going to make, it's going to be with a sophisticated owner who knows the score, understands the business and the game, and first and foremost will always put the best interest of the horse above all else. And as far as the Eclipse partners who are underneath the Eclipse umbrella, look, they're engaging Eclipse and myself and our team for our expertise. They're paying for that. So they want Aaron Wellman and they want Eclipse managing their equine assets. So that's a big part of it. But at the end of the day, any alignment that we're making is with sophisticated, good people that we've got experience with. And I really do have conviction that people don't control horses. The word control is overused in this business, I think, a little bit too much when it comes to management. Horses control people. And if you align yourself with people who understand that and let the horses tell the people what the right moves are, you're going to be just fine. And that's sort of the way we go about it. And we've got a lot of depth in our experience with individuals and partnering with them. And hopefully the value that Eclipse brings to the table speaks for itself in these alignments.
Well, the results go a long way in terms of doing the speaking. What are the thoughts on, you mentioned Annex for the going forward. What about a couple of the other winners? Let's round out the weekend results. The four-year-old Nocturnal obviously has had issue or two to delay getting the career really in motion, but seems like there's some blue sky ahead. There was the Shadwell, the one you acquired, Saif. And then on Sunday, there was that Aviano, who looks like there's a big future.
Absolutely. And we're hoping that the Saturday and Sunday that we had a couple weeks ago down at Gulfstream, we've got deja vu all over again in a couple weekends here on Florida Derby Day, the 27th, as we're hoping that a handful will come back on that same card. You mentioned Nocturnal. He's a colt that we've always thought very highly of. Actually, bought into him in conjunction with his breeder, Everett Dobson, Candy Meadows, Cheyenne Stable, as a weanling. He's the son of Palace Malice, who was campaigned by Dogwood Stable, who we did a joint venture with several years ago and really gave us a shot in the arm with Cot Campbell. So we had some partners that were involved in Palace Malice who wanted to scout some babies. And this colt happened to be out of a half-sister to Carolina, who was one of Eclipse's initial franchise series. So it just happened to work out really well. We bought into Nocturnal with Mr. Dobson. He's been an incredible partner, and he definitely is a horse that has taken time and patience, but he is extremely talented. He's a very fast colt. We've gone the path of least resistance with him to this point, but you might see him on the 27th on the Florida Derby undercard in the Ghost Zapper, grade three, going a mile and an eighth for Todd, and he's a horse that, if we can manage to keep him on the straight and narrow, we think there's no limit to his potential. And we've always had sort of pie-in-the-sky pipe dreams of seeing him emulate his daddy in the Met Mile. So if he runs well this Saturday, it could be a situation where we work backwards from that. But first things first, and let's get the Ghost Zapper one on the 27th. And then Aviano is a horse that we spent quite a bit of money on as a yearling at the Saratoga Select Sale, where we've been very fortunate to buy some really good horses out of. He is a very talented horse that's just a little bit immature still, even though he's run four times. It was a shame he didn't break his maiden in any of his first three starts. He was probably best in all three of them and just was a bit unlucky. Got the job done under incredible Irad Ortiz ride that Sunday a couple Sundays ago. He's a horse that we're going to consider potentially for the rush away at Turfway on Jeff Ruby Stakes night there, or an allowance on the grass at Keeneland early April. So we're sort of playing the fence there, but he's a horse that he isn't quite ready for the classic trail, but we're hoping that this early season development propels him into big things the second half of the year, because he's a very, very good horse.
Among a roster right now of really nice runners, we should also fold in Independence Hall coming out last week in the big cap, and Mia Martina. I mean, obviously not everybody that gets led over is going to win, but it sure feels like you've got as strong a cast right now as you ever have.
Yeah, it's a testament to our partners who just keep putting their faith in the baby blue and black here at Eclipse. Without them, you know, there's no way that I'd be scouting talent down at OBS right now, or scouring the globe for private purchases, or getting ready to go down to Gulfstream to Fasig for their 2-year-old sale in a couple weeks. It's all their faith and putting their hard-earned money into our program that allows us to be able to be in a position to buy these good horses. And like I said, it's a portfolio game, spreading risk, and we just, like I like to say, keep it going, because we are in some kind of zone right now, coming off a huge 2020, and just want to keep delivering for our partners, and we're off to a good start in 2021, and hopefully we can keep that mojo flowing.
Couple of horses to ask about too that we haven't seen yet on so far the calendar year. We're, you know, 9 weeks, 10 weeks in. Speech has got to be getting close to a return, no?
She is. She's inching closer and closer. She's actually training out of her mind for Michael McCarthy at Santa Anita right now, but we're just trying to keep her on all four. Michael and I have refrained from having this conversation as to where we might launch her four-year-old campaign. I have a feeling I'm going to head up to Santa Anita on Sunday morning to see her breeze, most likely, and touch wood if all goes well. It's about time we put a circle around some target. So we're excited about her. And, of course, we've got Valiant on the comeback trail as well after having won the Spinster last year at Keeneland and then finishing second to Monomoy Girl in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So with those two grade one winning fillies coming back for what will hopefully be a really strong second half of their campaigns, you know, we lost Sharing to injury, a freak accident in a paddock after she was third in the American Oaks this year. So again, you know, there's power in numbers, and we're just so fortunate to have a roster that when you lose a filly like Sharing, who's a Breeders' Cup champion, but you've got the likes of Valiant and Speech and Red Lark and so many others, thankfully, to back them up, it sort of keeps you going, and you want those Saturday players on the team that you can throw out there hopefully once a month or so.
Well, and when it comes to, you know, putting it together, we referenced the sale, and you're not there, but you'll be down at Gulfstream for the sale in 2 weeks after Florida Derby Day. You got your bird dogs down at OBS. Give us a feel going into the 2 year old in training sale season, Aaron Wellman. What names do you have a little bit of an affection for so far in terms of some of the, particularly the first crop sires? What's caught your eye?
It's always interesting, and you're going to swing and miss more than you're going to hit the ball out of the park when it comes to trying to project which of these first crop stallions are going to hit. You know, you start when you start seeing their foals on the ground, and then it's yearling sales, and now we're starting to see these horses move a bit on the racetrack. So I will say, you know, we've got a sample right now at OBS that is sort of kicking off the two-year-old in training season, and the couple of names that I keep landing on, writing down on my short list, are Connect, a son of Curlin, and Klimt, actually a son of Quality Road. So those are the two right now that have kind of made my OBS March short list the most, but I'm sure that as the season ticks on, we'll be shifting gears and focusing our attention on others. But right now, if you put my finger to it, it's those are the two that seem to be popping up on the short list the most right now.
Interesting. And who's over at Ocala that is doing the, you know, the eyes boots on the ground work?
Yeah, I would much prefer to be there in person myself. I'm an instinctual gut feel guy, so I like to lay my hands on these animals and look them in the eye. But hopefully that'll happen in the next week or so. I'm due to get my second dose of the vaccine on Friday. So while I got to sit this one out and play remotely, I'll be down at Gulfstream and then at the rest of the sales throughout the year. But I've got my man, Gary Young, who's been my man on the stopwatch from day one. Good friend, always in Southern California. We've been at the races together for 35, 40 years. So love working these sales with Gary and getting his feel for what he sees on with his eyes and the stopwatch. And then Jacob West, also on the Eclipse team.
Sure.
Great eye for talent. So Jacob's another man on the ground that I've got there. So between the two of those guys, I think we've got an excellent team that that gives me the confidence to be able to watch this one remotely. And like you were talking to Tom Ventura about before I came on, you know, the technology that is easily accessible nowadays is so superior and really does give you a feel for what these horses are all about. It's not ever going to be the same as being there and seeing them in the flesh and trying to pick up on those idiosyncrasies and those intangibles, but it's as good as it can possibly be under the circumstances, and it gives you confidence to be able to buy. So with Gary and Jacob down there, I feel very comfortable that we've got a great and talented and trustworthy team. And of course, I'm glued to whatever I need to be paying attention to here and putting in all the work video-wise and speaking to the vets and doing everything that allows for the due diligence process to be as foolproof as possible to ensure the protection of our partners' dollars and hopefully buy sound horses who have talent. And that's the name of the game.
How has your approach when it comes to, you know, particularly the two-year-olds, because you've done what's interesting, and we've talked about this before, but I'm curious if you know, how things have changed. The breeding side, you know, keeping certain mares versus, you know, buying yearlings and developing them with your own starters versus the, you know, two-year-old in training process and a mix and match. I mean, talk about how that, you know, your approach has changed or morphed over the years.
Sure. Well, it starts with the premise that I believe a good horse can come from anywhere at any time. So we are always open-minded about where we seek out our equine talent. Our preference is to buy made horses, horses who have made it to the races, who have shown ability at an early stage of their career, and we believe have huge upside potential, what we like to call a blue sky prospect. We've been very fortunate buying horses privately off the racetrack, so every day of the week I'm scouring results and watching video from all over the world, trying to buy horses privately for the Eclipse portfolio. And, you know, it started back right when we launched Eclipse back in late 2011, early 2012, with horses like In Lingerie and Sweet Cat and Byrama, all who carried the banner to Grade 1 heights. And it's just gotten that much more intense since then. And then, of course, you've got the yearling sales, where we've been very, very fortunate, and we try to hone our skills. And everything I learned from the time I was a kid coming out to Keeneland with Eddie De La Housse, one of my mentors, I owe to him my eye for yearling talent. And we've been so lucky. We've bought Taproot, a classic winner, filly in Australia's yearling, Pino, Carolina, Danza, the list goes on. And then, of course, you've got the two-year-old in training sales, which are kicking up today. I've been so lucky. Gary Young's been instrumental in honing my skills in that genre. Started right off the bat in 2012, our first trip down to OBS. We bought Kappa Bastone, who ended up winning the King's Bishop, and been so fortunate to pluck a lot of good horses out of the two-year-old in training sales. And as you mentioned, you know, as your partners become more sophisticated and their taste evolves, and, you know, you have some fillies that might fit a boutique broodmare band, so to speak. We've retained some broodmares and tried to develop a little bit of a program in that respect for our partners to enjoy and go through that process, which is very challenging and trying, but hopefully gratifying long-term as well. So we've picked and chosen spots here and there to retain some mares that we didn't think would command a program appropriate value for money at the auctions that we would have sold them in. They might have gotten injured, but had shown a lot of talent in their training, and we thought that rather than giving up on them for pennies on the dollar, we could try to develop some value through the broodmare process. So we're just now starting to develop a nice broodmare band. We had a foal last night, actually. We've got three or four on the ground already.
Congratulations.
So we try to provide our partners with the broadest scope and a variety of flavor to be able to pick and choose what it is that they really love about this game. There's so many facets that people can sink their teeth into and really have a passion for. And that's our job at Eclipse, is to provide them with the opportunities to really decide what it is, what sectors of the market they want to participate in, whether that's private purchases or yearlings or two-year-olds or getting into the breeding game. We really do it all and try to diversify our product as much as possible for our partners.
Well, the opportunity to add some two-year-olds, everybody loves two-year-olds. Whenever anybody writes to me, they say, are you going to have two-year-olds this year? There's something special about the babies and the opportunity for Eclipse to start building the two-year-old roster starts in about 5, 6, 8 minutes. And Aaron Wellman, congratulations on just a steady drumbeat of successes already in 2021. Looks like it should be another terrific year for anybody that needs more information about Eclipse and to get in touch with Aaron. I mean, obviously, you can follow him on Twitter and so forth, but EclipseTBPartners.com. As always, Aaron, continued success.
Really appreciate it, Steve. And again, I say it time and again, every time you're so gracious to have me on the show, please keep doing what you're doing. Even just bringing the Ohio story to light says a lot about what you stand for as a journalist, as a supporter and promoter of the sport. So we appreciate all that you do, and just keep it going, and hopefully I'll see you sooner rather than later.
Exactly. Thanks, Aaron, as always. Aaron Wellman, everybody, and Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and the far-flung partners, and all the different people. Frankly, it's a huge compliment to Aaron, the kind of people that are partnered up with him. Let's take a top-of-the-hour break, and we'll have an opportunity to talk to Andy Serling. He's going to join us next. We'll go over some of the weekend results, get some thoughts from Andy. And I think I just got a text, and I did just get a text back from Maggie Moss. Maggie's going to join us after we talk to Andy this morning. I don't know if you've saw the story that she generated yesterday, but right? Was it yesterday or Sunday? I'm going to lose track already. I think it was Sunday morning. She had gotten word of some horses in a kill pen and swung into action. And it turns out the deputy of all horses had somehow found his way into harm's way. And so Maggie jumped in and did what she did, and then there's a handful of I guess broodmares that were also with him, and these stories are just such a cringing, agonizing portion of of our kind of overall sport that it can't be ignored, and Maggie is relentless in her efforts to aftercare issues and the perils of the slaughter pipeline. So Maggie Moss, haven't talked to her on the air in ages. So looking forward to that too. Stay with us. Hour three at the races, and we got Cheltenham results. We're going to try to get a Cheltenham in at about 11:40. And in the second, Kev nailed a nice big price behind the favorite. So he's got one score in already.
pretty good. Back after this, hour three at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Sirius XM Sports.